overall, this is really a good draft. Like, I think when you look at the talent, just position by position, Coach and I have talked a lot about this. It's a good draft, and it feels really good. And priority, need, position. I think we're going to have the ability to address those needs.
The NFL draft, the first draft for Omar Khan as Steelers GM, is almost upon us, and we will be talking about that extensively here at the Pittsburgh CityCast today. Tim Benz with you. Download the BetRivers app or go to BetRivers.com. Bet now from anywhere. Lots to discuss regarding the Steelers and the draft in just a few moments. But first of all, we've got to talk about the Pirates a little bit. There's no denying the hot start of the Pittsburgh Pirates in 2023 at 16-7. The Pirates lead the National League Central Division. Thus far, the previously forlorn Buccos have a 7-game win streak, lead Major League Baseball with 14 quality starts, lead the National League in stolen bases with 25, are tied with the Phillies for the Major League lead in triples with 7, have a Major League best 12 saves and 14 opportunities, are tied for 4th among MLB pitching staffs when it comes to innings pitched by starters at 128. The only thing that hasn't been very strong for the Pirates has been the schedule. The Pirates' 6 opponents, including 8-15 Cincinnati twice, are a collective 30 games under 500. The only team the Pirates have faced thus far who is above 500 are the 12-11 Houston Astros. Starting tonight, the Pirates should get an increased test in competition from the Dodgers. LA comes to PNC Park for a 3-game series that begins with a pitching matchup between Noah Syndergaard of the Dodgers and Yoan Oviedo of the Pirates. Syndergaard has struggled so far this season at 0-3 with a .491 earned run average. Meanwhile, Oviedo 2-1 with a .222 ERA. He has just allowed 2 runs in his last 19 and two-thirds innings and has racked up 3 straight quality starts. Like the Astros, the Dodgers are a defending division winner who has started their title defense decently but not great at 12-11. They're a half game behind the surprising Arizona Diamondbacks in the NL West. LA may be starting to heat up, though. The club just won 3 of 4 games in Wrigley Field against the Chicago Cubs. The loss was a 13-0 blowout, but the Dodgers scored 22 runs over the 3 wins in the series. Now, the Pirates are catching a break in the sense that Clayton Kershaw isn't scheduled to pitch during the series for Los Angeles. He just posted a victory in the Sunday game against the Cubs. Also, Max Muncy is going on the paternity list. He leads all of baseball with 11 home runs. Relief pitcher Brusdar Gatterall is also on the paternity list. The organization is hoping to get Evan Phillips back from it today. As a team, LA has 43 homers, the most of the National League. They're also tops in the NL in slugging percentage at .460, tied for first in runs with .121 with the Cubs. That said, the Dodgers do strike out a lot, 220 times. That's 5th most of the majors. But the pitching and defense, they don't give away a lot of free bases. Los Angeles pitchers have yielded just 55 walks, 2nd fewest in Major League Baseball. And the defense has committed only 9 errors. Just 8 teams have fewer. To the surprise of many, the Pirates beat the Dodgers 5 times in 6 tries a year ago. The 2022 Pirates won just 62 games. The Dodgers won 111 last year. The Dodgers' payroll last year, a major league high, $270 million. The Pirates spent just over $56 million, third lowest in baseball. The Pirates have increased their spending now to $75.9 million this year. That's 27th in MLB. The Dodgers have trimmed to a piddly $227 million, fifth most in Major League Baseball. After this series, the Pirates head to Washington. The Nationals are 7-14, last place in the National League East. Then they visit Tampa. The Rays, a whopping 20-3, the best record in baseball. Tonight, how about this? Pirates and Dodgers split almost right down the middle at -106 for the Buccos to win straight, -108 for the Dodgers. Did you ever think you'd see the day where Los Angeles is only -108 at PNC Park? Here's the thing, though. With Syndergaard pitching, I still don't know if that's good value. With no Muncy tonight and the Pirates' bats struggling a little, I might lean under at +100 for an 8.5 run line. I just gave you all the run stats earlier, but it's -118 to go over. So I might lean towards the under. And with the Dodgers' whiff rate, what I really like is Oviedo on the strikeout total over 5.5. He's gone 5, 10, 6 in his last 3 games. And the Dodgers do strike out a lot, like we said. I also like Freddie Freeman over total bases at -1.5. All right, on to the draft. For months, Pittsburgh Steelers fans and media members have been gushing about the franchise acquiring the Chicago Bears pick in the second round of this year's draft. They were doing so even before it became obvious that the selection would be the first one in the second round. Even by early December, when the Bears were clearly limping toward the finish line of 2022, however close that pick got to the top of the second round, it was clear that the selection would result in great value in exchange for Chase Claypool, a guy who caught just 14 passes for 140 yards in 7 games for the Bears after the trade back on November the 1st. The way the Steelers' Twitter types drooled over the pick, you would have thought the Steelers had acquired the number 2 overall pick instead of 32. And sure, based on Claypool's performance so far in Chicago, it looks like a fleecing. But let's be honest, though. Part of the celebration over that result is that now we can all subconsciously forget that Claypool ended up being nothing more than a foul ball second rounder for the Steelers themselves. Oh, by the way, in a year, 2020, where they didn't even have a first round pick. So let's avoid pretending that kind of after-the-fact scrubbing of the old mental hard drives isn't happening here, because it is. Now, during the pre-draft press conference Monday, Steelers coach Mike Tomlin and general manager Omar Khan ramped up the enthusiasm about having the top pick in the second round. Here's Tomlin.
Man, we're excited about it, man. We've been talking about it. I think the thing that we're least familiar with about it is the amount of calls that we will be or could be getting. And that's where we spend our time, is just talking about how do we organize and how do we get prepared for the receiving of the amount of interest that pick could have. And that's a good and exciting possibility for us.
In fact, Tomlin seemed so keyed up about that pick, there's only one conclusion to draw about how they would want to use it. Trade it.
I think preparedness makes that less spontaneous. I think that 32nd position is something that's new to us. And that's something that probably is going to have more of our attention in terms of the spontaneity of it or the uniqueness of it. It's just due diligence in terms of preparing for the myriad of things that could happen at 17, whether we stay there, move up, move back. That's everyday business for us, or every year business.
Tomlin said he and Khan are also preparing for the types of trade inquiries that they might get, specifically when it comes to teams looking for a quarterback.
I think that's what's exciting about, you mentioned 32. Being in that position, we're acknowledging that we're not quarterback shopping, and that position might be one that attracts quarterback shoppers. And so it's exciting to see what might transpire with some of those phone calls and the value that we might be able to get. It is a unique position for us to be in, and we are very excited about it.
Now, to Tomlin's point, let's say the Steelers do use their current first-round pick at number 17. The first pick in the second round could go to a QB-hungry team if only 2 or 3 QBs go in the first round. That could be something that results in even a bigger haul for the Steelers than what would normally be the case, because when it comes to the draft or free agency, there's always inflation with all things quarterback-related, even in the second round. However, the Steelers end up using that currency for the 6 months of hype it has received, though, the front office needs to hit a home run with that pick. If the goal is to package number 32 with number 17 to get in the top 10 for Christian Gonzalez or Paris Johnson or Jalen Carter, then they better pick the best of that lot. You know, saying that the Steelers ostensibly turned Chase Claypool into a top 10 pick does have a nice ring to it, doesn't it? If the team uses that pick in its current location as the top selection in the second round, then it needs to get the best player possible at defensive line, offensive tackle, or cornerback. In other words, what they didn't get in round one. If they sleep on it overnight, Thursday into Friday, and deal it away for value next year or an additional second rounder this year, those two selections better pay off. Because Tomlin is right about that pick, and to an extent, the outside hype surrounding it has been warranted. It's useful, it's highly valuable. It is a way to make up for what Claypool didn't turn out to be. But it's not just a fun toy or a freebie. With that much appeal and attention on number 32 and why the Steelers have it to begin with, using that chip successfully feels like it's almost as important as getting number 17 right in the first round, honestly. So they better not screw it up. I mean, Tomlin and Khan can't count on the Bears to trade with them every year, can they? All right, let's get more insight on the draft with Matt Williamson, our pro and college scout, former pro and college scout, who is now with Steeler Nation Radio. He joined me on the Breakfast with Ben's podcast over at Trib Live, and we went position by position, day by day, a couple weeks ago, and we posted podcasts every day breaking down the positions. Let's get to the last two. I sort of edited them together for you here to make it easy listening as we touch on the skill position guys, the wide receivers, the tight ends, the QBs, and the running backs. We'll do that to wrap up the Pittsburgh CityCast today in advance of the draft. And Matt, I'd love to talk to you about the wide receiver crop today. Yeah. We'll start there and then get the tight end conversation going. The receiver thing is intriguing because they sure could use one. I wonder, though, if they – I might have a similar conversation with you to start off here about wide receiver that I brought up at tackle, which is, do they think it's as big of a deal as some of the fans do? Are they as – interested in bolstering the wide receiving corps the fans want them to do, or do they think with Austin getting healthy and maybe Anthony Miller getting healthy, they're going to be okay there?
I don't know. I don't know their thoughts on it. My thoughts are I am excited about Austin. I think Miller is somewhat of a diamond in the rough and was really disenchanted after he got hurt in camp because I thought he was really clearly making the team and was going to make an impact. But I get really greedy with pass catchers, and this will be correlate to tight end and receiver. When you have a young quarterback, I mean, they were so healthy on offense. I think they're fine now at receiver, but if Deontay or Pickens misses a game, all of a sudden you're not, you know, and then Pickens or Pickett is in a bind then. So I would like to add one more prominent pass catcher, whether that's a move tight end, a dominant slot receiver, more so than an outside guy. But the tight end class is, I think, the strongest position in this entire draft. And receivers are the weakest they've been in recent memory in this class.
And I feel like they've all come out the last couple of years, and eventually pond got dry and needs to be restocked. Like,
right.
Quentin Johnson from TCU is the best one, right?
No. Jackson Smith Njigba is my man crush. I adore this player. We talked earlier in the week about those two tackles from Georgia and Ohio State that you run to the podium for at 17. I know this is not a popular take, but if Jackson Smith Njigba is there at 17, I'm sprinting to the podium because I think your offense gets extremely hard to play against, that you don't see the Gentries and Gunners and Sims and Millers. You see Smith Njigba over and over and over. I think this guy is 100 catch a year, time and time again, but mostly a slot.
Did you make it out of the first round?
No. I'm praying he makes it to 17. Will they jump on him if he does? I don't know. You did mention Quentin Johnston, though. A big thing he has going for him is he, by far, is the only prototypical size speed guy. And he's a very good prospect. I just don't think he's nearly as refined as Smith Njigba. What's the only thing I can say bad about Smith Njigba is he only played like 40 snaps this year, but he was better than Olave. He was better than Garrett Wilson. And those guys are stars as rookies. Quentin Johnston's the outside the numbers dude, really good after the catch, kind of a Mike Evans type. So I think that he has that going for him, where he's one of the only ones with the prototypical dimensions.
I was going to ask you about that, how you thought he compared to the other Ohio State guys. You answered it. You also said you think, should I use the phrase pure slot? I mean, does he have to be a slot guy or can he play outside the numbers?
He never had to, but if he was at like any other school in the country, he would have, and we would have that answer, which is sort of the Justin Jefferson situation. If Jamar Chase wasn't there, Justin Jefferson would have lined up outside the numbers more, and then he comes to the league and he does it great. Now, Justin Jefferson might be the best receiver in the league. I think Smith Njigba would be more than fine outside the numbers because his route running is pristine. His change of direction is pristine. But in this situation, I'm more interested in slot guys and leave Deontay and Pickens on the outside anyway.
Where are you in the Jordan Addison debate?
He would be a dynamic, smaller slot that certainly can line up outside. I've referenced this all week that I'm going to put together my Steeler top 17. He'll be in it, but he'll be 14, 15, 16. His tape at USC wasn't as good as it was at Pitt. He's playing with two first-round quarterbacks, but I don't think you can discount the Pickett-Addison combination. He would make the offense harder to play against. You know, I talked about how I get greedy at receiver, and you throw him into the mix, and again, you're not seeing the gunners and Sims out there that defenses like to see. I mean, you're putting out high-quality skill guys time and time again. So I'd be fine with it. I hope you could do better at 17. I don't think there's any chance he's there at 32.
Zay Flowers out of Boston College is a player I really like. Mm-hmm. It's not popular to say in Pittsburgh because so many people are rooting for the Addison-Pickett reunion. By the way, when did Jordan Addison become a babyface again? Everybody was so mad at him when he transferred to USC. Right, now everybody wants him back again because of what happened with Pickett.
The draft connection. Pickett,
Yeah, those guys were electric together, no doubt. But I like Zay Flowers. I always have. And, I mean, if you just put a neutral uniform on the both of them and didn't know about the connection between Addison and Pickett, I'd go with Zay Flowers.
I'm very close on that, too. So I ranked receivers. I had Smith Njigba clearly number one. I had Johnston two. And then I was torn between Flowers and Addison. I went with Addison slightly above him. But I think you can get Flowers at 32, and I don't think you can get Addison at 32. And you probably noticed this. I mean, everyone in the stadium knew Boston College was throwing the ball to Zay Flowers, and it didn't matter. I mean, clearly the best player on their offense, and people couldn't slow him down. He would be a slot here. He's small, but he's dynamic. He's tough. You know, he can also line up outside the numbers. And a name I want to mention that's similar that I don't have a slight step behind Flowers is North Carolina's Josh Downs. I mean, he's a smaller, pure slot, also very dynamic, shifty, extremely agile, great change of direction. So all those guys would make you much harder to play against, and we'd be Pickett favorites, I think.
Plus, you got Mike Tomlin with his son at Boston College. I'm sure he's seen the very best of Zay Flowers, to be sure. Last thing on these guys, you just sort of alluded to it with Downs. I'm kind of looking at the lineup of wide receivers, the depth of the wide receivers, and I feel like there's a cut beyond the first four or five. And then I'm wondering, isn't there better depth at other positions of need for the Steelers? And do they just wait until like the fourth round for a wide receiver? Like, I mean, I don't know, an A.T. Perry, a Cedric Tillman. They looked at Xavier Hutchinson at Iowa State, and I hear he's an intriguing prospect.
Yeah, Marvin Mims I would throw in that mix, Jalen Reed, Tyler Scott, Michael Wilson from Stanford. But none of them – we all know their excellent and storied history of day two receivers. And I don't know that in the third round or the second round pick – any of those names we mentioned, I would put my stamp of approval in. There's just not 12 guys like usual that'll come in and make impacts. There's five. And I think this receiver class is not a great place to go shopping. So I kind of feel like you go big or go home.
Let's get to tight ends then, Matt. You said you love the class.
Oh, yeah.
And this has not been a hot spot the last couple years. Is Michael Mayer from Notre Dame your number one? And is Sam Laporta of Iowa the most likely to be linked to the Steelers as a possibility?
First off, and this sounds insane, I think there might be 10 or 12 true NFL starting tight ends in this class.
Wow.
It's 10. The best. Yes. I mean, 2 years from now, we might be like, wow, 10 guys are starting for out of 32 in the league right now. Jeez. Out of this class. And I always quote, you know, Coach Tomlin on this one. I mean, they're giving you so much red paint at the tight end position. Paint the damn barn red. You know, go get one. You know, and signing Zach Gentry doesn't change my mind at all. I keep referencing being harder to play against. Yeah, I think when Gentry's out there for 50% of the snaps, the defense says thank you. If Sims or certainly gunners out there for a high percentage of snaps, the defense says thank you. But Musgrave, Schoonmaker, Washington, Laporta, Kraft, Kincaid, I can go on and on and on. they would make your skill position guys better. And before they signed Gentry, I thought they really had to be in the Darnell Washington, Michael Mayer, inline, big-time blockers, free up Fryer move, you know, move only. Now with Gentry, though, Dalton Kincaid from Utah State is closer to Jackson Smith Njigba that we talked about than he is Gentry. You know, like there's these move tight ends now. I think you have to, and you know, exit this draft with a tight end, even if it's a fourth round pick that 9 out of 10 drafts go at the end of the second that you get in the fourth because there's so many of them. You know, a guy you mentioned was Laporta. He could be that guy. I mean, if you get him in the third, most years he's going to be a second. Maybe he even falls to the fourth. Tucker Kraft is another name to know. So,
South Dakota State, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's just so many of these guys. Kuntz from Kutztown is the most athletic tight end that ever went to a combine. You know, he was stuck behind Freiermuth at Penn State, so he transferred. So I just think there's all shapes and sizes and tons of them. My favorite, and I do think the top four, Darnell Washington, Musgrave, Kincaid, and Mayer, you could put them in a bag and shake them up in whatever order they came out, I would accept. But Musgrave is my favorite. I think he has Kelsey-like strides, you know, running through the secondary, a really diverse background. I mean, he was a skier. He did all kinds of different things, and he's just been injured. I think he's a potential star, and he's not alone in this class. You got to get one of these guys.
Yeah, and you have to kind of look at Freiermuth's concussion history, too, and be a little concerned there.
Right, right. Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I mean, you hate to say it, but what, he's 2 years away from his contract being up, and if he gets injured again, are you going to invest in him? You know, so I think all these guys that I keep bringing up are really worth bringing in, and I think you can get a pretty good discount on them. Because there's so many, though, I wouldn't take one at 17. I would start thinking at 32.
We're going to wrap up the quarterbacks and the running backs. Probably not top of mind for the Steelers, given all the other needs that we talked about. But they're still worth discussing because the Steelers could use depth at both positions, and especially with the quarterback position. As the quarterbacks go, that dictates the rest of the draft for sure. Now that we've got a year to look at Kenny Pickett, how do you feel about that selection now as opposed to draft day, first of all? I'll start off with that.
Much happier with it. I had more doubts about Pickett than I'm proud to say then. I have much fewer now. I really thought the second half of the season was very promising. I hesitate to say this, but I think he's almost over the hump that he's an NFL starting quarterback. How high his ceiling is, I don't know. I expect great strides in year two. He has things to work on. There's no doubt. I don't think the scheme helped him dramatically, but I think he would be with a year of NFL tape. I think he's as valuable as any quarterback in this draft. I mean, I think would you trade him straight up for Stroud or Young? I think that's a conversation.
Interesting to hear you say that, because I know there was at least one publication that said he'd be the fifth quarterback taken this year. Do you believe that?
I don't. I don't. The coming out of Pitt version might be. The late March 2023 version absolutely would not be.
Is Kenny Pickett going to be helped by being asked to do more next year, or will he be exposed?
Well, I think he can digest everything you put on his plate. I absolutely think that. I think he got better at his weaknesses. I didn't see a lot of the same mistakes made, which I thought is a great sign for a young quarterback. This isn't exactly in-depth analytic scouting, but he looked like he belonged. Nothing was too big for him. The things that are the great quarterbacks do that the rookies always struggle, and Kenny is in this area too, is his red zone passing and throwing between 10 and 20 yards. Those are the hardest throws in the league. Deep balls aren't, you know, off script plays aren't. You know, driving the ball 10 to 12 or 10 to 20 and the red zone stuff. And he was at the bottom of the league in both, as rookie starters always are. So that's the key to me. And scheme could help him a little more too. I mean, let's be honest.
I think there are only two quarterbacks that I would consider in front of Pickett if you took the Pitt version of Kenny Pickett or this mm-hmm. year's, the current version of Kenny Pickett. I would still only consider Young or Stroud in front of them.
They're my top two by a mile in this.
Okay, so there's a huge gap, you think, between
maybe not
two.
A huge gap, but there's a gap. Yeah, they should go first and second overall, in my opinion.
Levis from Kentucky and Anthony Richardson from Florida. I'm just not buying Levis so much. And Richardson, big questions, boom or bust.
Yes. So my rankings go Stroud, Young, Gap, Richardson. And I kind of cheat with Richardson because I want to know his work ethic. And is he going to be Jalen Hurts dedicated to getting better throwing the football? I don't know. Yes or no is probably the answer. I don't know. And then I was torn. I almost put Hendon Hooker ahead of Levis. I have a lot of doubts about Levis.
I agree with you. I just haven't seen enough to be convinced that he's a really good first-round worthy NFL quarterback. I don't know.
Yeah.
I kind of hear what you're saying. I think it's close between Levis and Hooker. I probably wouldn't elevate Hooker over Levis, but I'm also not drafting Levis and thinking to myself, well, there's my quarterback for the next 10 years.
Right. I mean, if I'm the Raiders at 7, I'm not just saying, oh, Levis fell to me, we're set. I have some doubts. His decision-making, his accuracy, not great. And he doesn't have the benefit, obviously, of having the supporting cast that Stroud and Young had. I mean, frankly, that was my big concern with Stroud is, has there ever been a good Ohio State quarterback in the pros? Like, my whole lifetime, Justin Fields has the chance to be the best, and he's still only 2 years in. But the more I watched Stroud, I thought he's really good despite who's around him.
So you said Young 1, Stroud 2, or the other way around?
Other way around. I prefer Stroud. I'll be very honest. I mean, Young has an uncanny feel for the game. But I looked at Tua, Lamar, Kyler, the small quarterbacks that have been drafted high. And just over the last couple of years, none of them finished the season. You know, Young size bothers me to no end. And it's not seeing the field. It's just being able to be the same player in week 16 that you are in the preseason, let alone 3 years in. I mean, it's just a durability thing with him that he is very little. He walked right past me at the combine. I thought, wow, I would have a hard time drafting him knowing that the pounding he's going to take over the next decade.
How many go in the top 50? How many quarterbacks go in the top 50? And I'm basically asking that.
Those five go in the
top 50?
And then I think there's a big drop-off. Tanner McKee's probably the sixth, but I think there's five that anyone logical would think are potential starters.
I was wondering if Hooker might be later than that.
I think Hooker might sneak into the first. Yeah, I don't know if you caught this, but Daniel Jeremiah had the Minnesota
Vikings.
I know
he's had some late healing.
Yeah. I mean, the knocks on him are he's old and he's injured, but his tape is really, really good. And a team like the Vikings would be ideal for him, or Minnesota or Detroit, or not Minnesota, the Lions or Seattle that have two first round picks, but don't need him this year. I think those are great spots for him.
That's five spots then that somebody the Steelers weren't going to take is going to be there.
Right.
I guess is what I'm saying. That's where I'm going with the analysis here. You want to see the quarterbacks go high, go early, because then it just frees up an extra player every time that the Steelers might want to consider. Yeah, that's overly simplistic, but that's what I'm rooting for.
Yes. However, we've talked about trading down here several times all week. And if Levis is sitting there at 17, you're not going to take him, but the Bucks might call, or somebody might call to go get him. Or what if Hooker's the only starting quarterback left when day one is over, and you're sitting there with the first pick in the draft? Maybe five teams that left out on quarterback are calling you to go get that guy.
I'll ask a similar question about our last position that we haven't talked about yet. And that's running back. How many running backs do you see in the top 50?
Two. I think Jahmyr Gibbs is an exceptional, smaller, great receiver, dynamic, is an early pick anytime he comes out. And I think Bijan Robinson's the best running back prospect I've ever seen, at least in the last 15 years.
How high do those two go?
I have no idea.
Because they're running backs?
because they're running backs. I mean, Bijan Robinson might be the best football player in this draft. I mean, if I was just analyzing tape, I think Jalen Carter is the only guy I would have a higher grade on. I don't think he goes in the top 10, though. And I think someone will take him that we don't expect, maybe the Chargers or the Cowboys, somebody that has a running back that has an expiring contract. He's a total superstar, though. And this isn't what you asked me, but we talked about tight ends yesterday, and I thought tight end was the best position group in this draft. I think running back or corner is fighting for second. So there's great depth. And as great as Robinson and even Gibbs are, the third, fourth round guys are going to be value because running backs don't go. And there's so many in this class. So they have a lot working against them in terms of, you know, draft capital.
Think they like Warren well enough that they don't bother taking a running back until the third day late?
Yeah, probably. I think the top two here are pretty well set. I still think there's a little bit of hope for McFarland. I'm torn if they do draft a running back, say the fifth round or whatever. Do they want a big play McFarland type guy that they thought they were getting? Or do they want Snell plus that's a great special teamer and gets his jersey dirty on kickoffs and punt returns and can carry the load a little bit? So I'd be real curious what type of back they address if they do get one, because they need explosive plays and they need core special teamers.
What do you think of Abanikanda out of Pitt?
Very explosive. I think he really fits like that Shanahan scheme where Raheem Mostert, where he was run, you know, give him one cut and boom, he attacks a hole and runs away from people. Really quick accelerator. One thing that scares the heck out of me, though, is he goes down when hit from the side way too easily. His contact balance isn't great, but I think he's a fifth round pick.
Kick returner too?
Probably. I haven't studied that aspect of him, but from what I understand, yes.
All right, so my thanks to Matt Williamson. The Steelers still holding at plus 6,000 to win the Super Bowl, and they continue to be at plus 3,000 to win the AFC Championship. That's been pretty steady for a while. Let's see what wheeling and dealing they do to impact how the lines sit after the draft. If they do trade up, I bet you there's some helium that'll affect the line and narrow it a bit for the Steelers. They're at plus 550 to win the North. The Bengals sitting pretty at plus 110. The Browns and Ravens at plus 325. Obviously, the Lamar Jackson situation is what's really interesting to watch there that will influence the lines in the North. As to the East, the Bills favored at plus 120, but now because of the Aaron Rodgers acquisition, the Jets are at plus 250 to win the East in front of the Dolphins, in front of the Patriots, are now the long shot at plus 800. In the AFC, let me see where I can find the Jets. My gosh, the Jets. Boy, you talk about overinflation. KC at plus 340 to win the AFC. Buffalo at 450. The Bengals at 450. Then it's the Jets next at plus 700. In front of the Chargers, in front of the Jags, in front of the Ravens, the Broncos, the Dolphins, and everybody else that you can imagine. All right, that'll do it for us. We'll be back next week. We'll recap the draft, of course, and spend a lot of time paying attention to the Pirates. As mentioned, they've got the Washington Nationals after this series in D.C., and they'll be in the thick of their series against Tampa after that. So we'll spend some time focusing on the Buccos next week here in the Pittsburgh CityCast. Check me out with Mark Madden on Thursday on the Mark Madden Podcast here at the Bet Rivers Podcasting Network, where you can bet now from anywhere. Download the app today or go to BetRivers.com.
Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh CityCast on the Bet Rivers Network.